In May 2008, the U.S. House of Representatives announced that July be recognized as B.B. Moore Campbell National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. Try saying all that in one breath. Whew. The title has been shortened and also referred to as National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. Many minorities suffer in silence due to a lack of knowledge, stigma, lack of mental health professionals, and lack of trust. We'll be touching on several of these points today. Keep it here. We'll be back in 15 seconds with SU Ag Podcast.
You know the legal drinking age is 21. You may also know this law protects teens. Find out more at don'tserveteens.gov. And thanks for not providing alcohol to teens. A message from the We Don't Serve Teens program and the Federal Trade Commission.
Mental health is a major issue in the world today. Approximately 44 million adults in America will experience mental illness this year. Mental health can affect anyone at any given time, no matter your race, your age, religion, or socioeconomic strata. It can even affect celebrities as well. Some of them have even opened up about their issues, such as Taraji P. Henson, Meghan Markle, Serena Williams, and Kanye West, just to name a few. I'm Dexter Newman, and we have with us today Ashlyn Harrison, who is an assistant specialist for mental health at the Southern University Ag Center. Ashlyn, we thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Now, Ashlyn, this is a serious topic, mental health with minorities in the minority community. A lot of people may not know that the month of July is Minority Mental Health Month. Why is that so important?
I think that as we look at mental health and we focus on minority communities, it's very important that we provide the resources and the strategies, but also to destigmatize mental health in these communities. So I think that this month is important to bring about awareness, but also to bring about action, to provide those resources and those hands-on things, as well as supports that can be provided within the community.
And those that are listening, even though July is mental health, Minority Mental Health Month, this information will be good all year long, 365 days a year. So, Ashlyn, you work on a university campus. Please elaborate on the unique mental health challenges that students at HBCUs, historically Black colleges and universities, just might encounter.
HBCU students tend to face unique mental health challenges from racial and cultural identity. They have to navigate their day-to-day lives, but then they're also navigating the racial identity discrimination and cultural expectations that they have on them. Also the academic pressure, so striving to have that success while dealing with the rigorous academic programs and high expectations. And then I think we all have that financial stress of just managing the financial burdens of tuition, their fees, and other expenses as a college student. So I think that the campus is starting to create a climate and a culture around addressing those mental health crises by not only having people on their team like me, but also providing resources to these students and making sure that they know where they can go. And then lastly, I would say that a very unique challenge that I think is often not addressed is that historical trauma piece, is that fact that we have to recognize the context of systemic racism and its impact, direct impact on mental health. So I think the students have challenges, but yet we can provide them with those resources to start combating those issues.
Well, are there any programs that Southern University has or implemented to support the mental health and well-being of students?
Yes. In August, we're going to be launching a six-session series, starting with, in August, we're going to do a session dealing with the students coping with leaving home, you know, those freshmen leaving their homes and then coming to their new home of Southern University. Then we're going to go into a series of just really providing them with resources for finals, as well as resources for coping with roommates and how to deal with that. So we're coming up with some series, so that'll be coming down the pipeline soon. But also I'm going to be providing direct counseling services to students as well as faculty and staff. So that way, if you are in need of immediate services, you can come to me, myself. And there's also a counseling center on campus that provides those resources as well. We're trying to build that supportive community to where there are partnerships with outside agencies as well, such as STAR and other other initiatives through LDH, the Louisiana Department of Health, to where we're going to provide those students 988 resources. 988 is a crisis hotline. So if you are in crisis immediately and you're not able to get services through 911, 988 is something that has been around for about 5 years now. That's a lot of times people are like, oh, you're saying the wrong number. It's like, no, it's 988. And it's a direct hotline to call a counselor, a licensed counselor within your area, and you will get those services free of charge. That service is going to be pushed out as well. So you'll be seeing those flyers around campus, those posters. And then I would also say that we were doing some wellness initiatives. So we did yoga on the yard. We're going to start doing some more wellness initiatives to promote that mindfulness and that well-being. We actually have an event coming up in July on the 26th and the 27th. We're going to do a mental health walk, and it's going to end with a meditation. And then we're also going to do an art walk through the Southern University Museum on the 27th, where we're going to do an art activity. So I'm starting to bring some self-care activities, some stress management, and some more holistic wellness practices and workshops and events, as well as educational campaigns to the campus.
Great. And see, that's what we need at Southern University, at all HBCUs, and also in minority communities as well. It's so great that you're here with us at the Southern University Ag Center. Ashlyn, what are the various types of mental illness, and should mental illness be treated as if you had any other illness, such as heart disease, diabetes, and so forth?
I think that the conversation needs to go that direction for sure, because oftentimes we don't have a problem talking about our health, but we have a problem and we stigmatize talking about our mental well-being. And if our mental is not okay, most of the time other things start to take place as well. So when it comes to our mental health and mental illness, I think that we have to start addressing it and seeing those professionals. So if you're not feeling well, you go to the doctor. If you're not feeling well mentally, do you just sit and cope with it, or do you actually go and seek that support? So I think it's time for us as a community to destigmatize that piece and start to have these conversations more often. Because as we think about, like you said, your well-being as your physical health, your mental health is directly also tied to your physical health as well. So oftentimes people think it's this separate thing, when in reality, your mental well-being affects your day-to-day. It can affect your mood during the day. It can affect your mood during life. It can affect how you interact and engage with others. So it's important to not only check in on your mental well-being, but also know the signs and symptoms of others when they are not mentally well. So if you start seeing individuals start to withdraw and not acting as themselves, check in with your friends, check in with your colleagues, and make sure that you're supporting them. And it doesn't necessarily have to be you telling them to go get mental health support, but you just providing that listening ear that they may need at that time. I also would say to provide that community of understanding, we have to start normalizing these types of conversations. I think that a lot of times we shy away from talking about how we're feeling mentally, and that's something that needs to be addressed at a larger scale.
Yeah, Ashlyn, thank you for that. You touched on another question that I had, but that's great, about the signs with mental health. So thank you for that. And many people, they experience stigma or reluctance when it comes to seeking mental health services. How can we work towards reducing this stigma and encouraging people to prioritize their mental well-being?
I would definitely say these types of conversations need to keep happening. In order to be comfortable, you have to be trusting of the people that you're talking to. So building that trust and that rapport with your colleagues, with your friends, and having these open discussions. Checking in, I think, is something very important that we should do daily. Just checking in on individuals, making sure that they're okay, but then also understanding those warning symptoms, understanding, okay, if you're feeling depressed, these are what the things you can do. Express your concern, but also express your support. So letting them know that you are concerned, but letting them know that you're there to support them, and reminding them that help is available. So providing them with the resources. You can't make someone go to therapy. I can't tell you, you know, you have to go to therapy, but I can give you the resources that you need in order to go and ask questions. And again, listening is probably the best thing to do in this type of situation. I also think that when we ask these questions, make sure you're not shying away from the hard things to ask. I think oftentimes we shy away from, are you thinking about suicide? That's something that we don't often ask one another. But if you're seeing someone that's going through that depressive state, you may want to ask them those more direct questions, but then listen and then give them those resources and have those resources readily available to provide them, because you know that they're going to need them after this conversation. And follow up. Make sure that you don't just leave that conversation and don't check back in on that person. Say, hey, you know, I gave you that information. Have you been able to contact a counselor? Have you been able to find someone? And just basically being that support system. Don't place judgment. Don't continue to hound them about, hey, have you called? You know, don't call them every day and pester them. But at the same time, make sure that they feel that support, but also make sure that you're patient and that you're allowing them the space to deal with it as well.
And also, what about this approach? If you know a relative or someone that may be closer to them than you, is it okay to maybe contact them if you have the contact information, or is it best to kind of, you know, talk direct to that person that you feel is having some type of mental issue?
It's best to definitely seek professional help. However, I would say, you know, including your friends and family in your plan, inviting them to be a part of it. That way you have that support system that can support you through this process. I also think that while, again, you can't, like, if you know someone that's suffering with mental illness, you can't personally call and make their appointment, but you can give them the resources that they need. So educating that person on understanding the facts and the problems of their mental health and understanding that it's not anything wrong. Like you said, the statistics are there. You know, every 1 in 5 adults suffers with mental illness. So how are we going to make sure that this number decreases? And then the fact that, you know, COVID is a whole nother topic for maybe another time, but COVID exacerbated the mental illnesses in the United States, worldwide, really. So it's important for us to remember that, treat it with respect, compassion, and empathy whenever you're speaking to someone dealing with their mental illness, because it is something that is truly possibly affecting them and their everyday tasks and all of those things. So just reassuring them that you're there and that your concern and your support is there as well.
And Ashlyn, that's going to wrap it up for us. And we thank you for being a part of SU Ag Podcast. We hope that something was said on this program today that will help someone along the way. And if you have any questions about mental illness, you can contact Ashlyn Harrison. Ashlyn, please let our listeners know how you can be reached.
Yes, you can email me at Ashlyn, Ashlyn _ Harrison, Harrison, at suagcenter.com. Ashlyn _Harrison at suagcenter.com.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of SU Ag Podcast. I'm Dexter Newman, and we'll see you later.